Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
All right, you guys, welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We are absolutely thrilled to have you here. I am your host, Laura Reeves. This We are so tired, we can't even point in the right direction on the camera. This is my co-host, Marty Greer. We are just off of a very busy full weekend of seminaring, and so forgive us for being just a little bit punch drunk. We have a, I think, really important conversation for you guys. We're talking about eyeballs. We're going to do this for a couple weeks, and there's lots and lots of different parts to the eyeball. Like when you think about eyeball in a dog, you're like, what? It's just the eyeball. But no, right, Marty?
Right. And we talked about this. We said, well, do we want to talk about the breed?
Right.
Do we
right.
want to talk about the part of the eye? Do we want to talk about age? Do we want to talk about cause? And we finally came up with, let's do it by anatomical region of the eye. And yep. people don't really think about the eye as having parts, but it has a
yes.
lot of parts.
I just think that is so cool because I don't think about it that way. I just think it's an eyeball. But no. So tonight we're talking about corneal disorders, correct?
Yes. So when you talk to an ophthalmologist, you'll hear a couple of things. One is the eyes are the window to the brain.
I thought they were the windows to the soul.
No, the brain. Sorry, hate to break it to you. I mean, it depends on who you talk to.
Right.
Number two is the rest of the body from eyes back is just meant to carry the eyeballs around. Like the whole rest of the body doesn't really matter. The ophthalmologists think the eyes are only thing you should be really focused on.
Okay.
Focused. Get it. And so when you look at the different anatomical parts of the eye, I think it's really important that people think about this because it's easy to just assume that the eye is the eye. But if you look at the models that they send to physicians and veterinarians and all the parts, they're very interesting structures and they're super complicated, but you know what? Kind of essential because vision is, I think we take a lot of vision for ourselves and our pets for granted.
Very much for granted. And, you know, when I think about eyeballs, I'm like, there's the white part and the brown part and the black part. And it feels like that's wrong.
Yeah, let's break it down a little more anatomically.
Excellently. Excellent. I love this plan. So the cornea is which part?
The cornea is the clear part that covers the eye as you see it. So if you put a contact lens on your eye, that's the part your contact sits on.
Okay.
If you touch your eye, first of all, you'll blink because you shouldn't touch your eyeball unless
stick your finger in your eye. Don't stick your finger in your dog's eye. I encourage you not to do that.
No, no. But it's the clear part of the eye. And it's not easy for the clear part of the eye to stay clear. And I think, again, we kind of take that for granted because most of the time when we're looking out, it's clear. When we're looking at our dogs, it's clear. But clarity is super important because the cornea is a very specifically structured organ that keeps all the fluid out. And as soon as fluid gets into it, then it becomes cloudy. And as soon as you see cloudiness or blood vessels or a change in the color of the cornea because it becomes darker, you need to see the vet yesterday.
Right. Okay. So what causes there to be, I mean, they don't get water in their eyes when they go swimming. What causes there to be fluid inside the cornea? What makes that happen?
Sure. So any break in the corneal surface will cause fluid to accumulate. And that's when you'll see like a corneal ulcer if the dog forgot to blink when it ran into a stick out in your yard, or if it's got an eyelash that's poking in or something else that happens to the cornea, then edema develops and that's that cloudiness. Glaucoma can look like that. Corneal endothelial dystrophy can look like that. So there's a few things that can cause that edema or that cloudiness to develop. So if you see edema, which is the cloudiness, if you see blood vessels or any evidence of blood, or if you see a change in the color because it's darker, Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any of those things are abnormal. And okay. that means that the cornea has some kind of damage to it, because the cornea should be this beautiful clear sheet of layers. Mm-hmm. And it's actually pretty freaking amazing how it works.
I think eyeballs are really cool. They kind of a little bit gross me out, but I think that this was actually a listener request, and the listener had questions specifically about pigmentary keratitis, which you said is called PK, sort of as a shorthand.
Yeah, PK, because pigmentary keratitis is kind of a mouthful. So that's one of the things that we can see happen with the cornea, where it becomes dark. And it's most commonly seen in dogs that have more protruding eyes. Mm-hmm. So it'll be the pugs, the Frenchies, mm-hmm. any of the dogs that have those cute little infantile looking faces. You don't see this in a collie, where their eyeballs are like 3 miles down the road.
There's a whole nother problem that goes with collies, right?
Yeah, we're not even going to go there tonight. But pigmentary keratitis is relatively common. It's related to exposure of the cornea, because the eyelids don't completely close over the eye. Sometimes even when they're sleeping, their eyelids don't completely close. I know. You've had pugs. You can.
Eyes close, man.
Okay, good. That's the way it's supposed to work. But it
just saying, my pug dog's eyes got all the way closed.
Right. So any of the dogs that have that bupthalmic eye, that more protruding eye, mm-hmm. will more frequently be affected by pigmentary keratitis. And that has some good treatments. But again, you need to see a veterinarian and get this taken care of when you start to see any changes at all. So if you have any question about the quality of your dog's eyes, get out your little flashlight or your cell phone light or whatever it is, and kind of look at their eye. Look at it with light. Look at it with magnification. You can see some pretty cool things if you start actually looking in the right kind of light with the right magnification. And the older you get, the more you realize magnification is helpful.
Magnification and lots of bright light so that you can read that really little tiny print on your prescription bottles or anything.
Yeah, the menu. Yeah. Remember when you used to go to a restaurant and you didn't have to turn on your flashlight to
and
read
get out
menu?
Your readers? And
yeah, back in the day.
It was a few days ago. So our dogs have different problems with their eyeballs than we do. So the pigmentary keratitis, it is the white part looks brown. Is that what I'm...
Okay, the clear part.
Misunderstanding.
Sometimes the white part looks brown, but that's really not important because you don't see through the white part. What's important is the clear part, the cornea itself.
Okay.
The white part is the sclera. The cornea is the clear part. So if they start to develop pigmentation that starts to cross over into the clear part of the eye, then the dog is going to have more and more trouble seeing the more it's covered. So if you get out your flashlight and really look at the dog's eye and you realize there's a whole bunch of brown, and oftentimes these aren't equal. Sometimes one eye is more affected than the other.
Right.
So sometimes the dog will have better vision out of one eye than the other one, and they'll kind of use that eye, like they kind of look at you side eyes. So these are the dogs that tend to need to have better lighting. And certainly there are medications that can slow the progression or reverse the progression of the pigment changes in the cornea. So if you see anything that doesn't seem right, or you have a pug or a Frenchie or a bulldog or any of the breeds that have those kinds of protruding eyes, pugs are the worst, by all means, they're the worst. Then you want to make sure that you're seeing a veterinarian, getting medication, and appropriately using the medication, because it's really easy to think it's not that big a deal because it's not a painful condition to the dog. Mm-hmm. But when the dog starts smacking into the wall or falling down the stairs because they can't see.
That's bad. That's a problem.
And you know you've probably waited a little too long. That's relatively common. The other two things that are really common are going to be corneal ulcers, which can be related to the pigmentary
that
keratitis.
I have seen. The pug dogs sticking their face into a bush and coming out with a scratch is pretty common.
Right. And they don't even have to be a pug dog to do that. We see hunting dogs that come in that have run through a field with burrs and those little weed seeds, and those will get under the third eyelid and cause damage. The kids can, you know, inadvertently poke at the dog. The dog can run into something. And one of the things when I was looking up this information about what we were going to talk about tonight was an airbag injury. And I've never seen an airbag injury, but the picture was really interesting because it's this little stippled pattern of a very specific grid of little dots on the dog's eye, which meant the dog was sitting in the front seat of the car. The airbag went off. The dog was not in a crate. The dog was not protected. And the airbag hit the dog's cornea and left basically a whole series of little tiny corneal ulcers. Don't do that. Don't put your dog in the front seat.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Your dog does not belong on the front seat. I don't care how cute it is. I don't care how much your dog likes to ride as your co-pilot. Your dog does not belong in the front seat because of airbag injuries can hurt the eye. They can hurt their neck. They can do a lot of damage. Dogs can go through windshields. Just don't do it. Just put your dog in a crate.
Dog crate.
So corneal ulcers are really common. We see these frequently, certain times of the year more than others because of hunting season or dry weather and the stuff. But these dogs will have not only a change in the cornea looking cloudy, not pigmented, but cloudy, but they'll come in with one eye slammed shut. Corneal ulcers are really painful conditions.
The eye waters and it's
terrible. Yeah, and slammed shut. And if it's both eyes, then the dog is really going to have a hard time. Or the cat's going to have a really hard time because with both eyes slammed shut, you can't really see. And I experienced my first corneal ulcer myself about a year ago. And yeah, they're as painful as you think they are. There's a reason the dog keeps their eye closed because it really hurts to have a corneal ulcer. So don't
tell you my story about going hunting and getting a grass seed in my eye.
Oh, no, you have never told me that.
I've never told you this story. So as a young munkin trailing along behind my dad during bird season, we were in tall grass and something smacked me in the eye and I didn't even think about it. And I kept going and it just kept hurting and hurting and hurting and my eye hurt. I was running and I kept telling my dad, something's in my eye, something's in my eye. So my father was not what you'd call the most sensitive or sympathetic human being.
He thought you were just making up something.
He did. He did. He told me to shut up. I was making it up. I was being a weenie. That wasn't even the nicest word. That was the nicest thing that I can say for what he said to me. Anyway, so I went on and carried on about this for hours. And finally, my mother took pity on me and took me to the ER. And they had to put a shot in my eyeball and roll my eyeball back because they couldn't see anything. You know, the weed seed was about an inch long. And it had gone all the way into the back of my eyeball, like behind in my head back then. So I used that for a while to make my dad feel guilty about not paying attention to me when I said I had an owie.
I wasn't kidding, Dad.
I wasn't kidding. It really was bad. Yeah. So, yes, I feel for these dogs with corneal ulcers because it was not cool.
It's painful. I had a contact lens solution that went south on me and ended up with a corneal ulcer. And fortunately, I had an appointment with my ophthalmologist the next day. So I was on the phone with her. She was a very kind woman. And she said to me, well, you know, you can use some eye lube. And I said, okay, can I use this stuff? And she's like, is it for dogs? I said, yeah. She said, okay, what's in it? And I told her, she's like, yeah, you can use that. And I said, so how do you feel about this if I have my cornea stained by one of my doctors? And she's like, yeah, go for it. So I went to see her at her appointment the next day, and the resident, the poor student, I go to the Eye Institute in Milwaukee at Frater, and the poor student comes into the room and she says, so what are you here for? And I told her, and I said, so I have a corneal ulcer. And she said, did you go to ER? I said, no. She said, well, how do you know you have a corneal ulcer? I said, well, I stained it. And she's like, what do you mean you stained it? And I said, well, at that point, she didn't know I was a veterinarian. And so my eye doctor comes in and she goes, oh yeah, great pictures. I'm like, yeah, thanks. But this poor resident was looking at me like she had no idea what was happening around here. Like, what is happening here?
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I stained it. One of my doctors looked at it. She's like, yeah, you got a corneal ulcer. These things hurt. And even if they're very superficial, they hurt. So you see a change in the color. You see the dog slamming their eye shut or their cat slamming the eye shut. If those things happen, if their dog is holding their eye completely closed, you need to go to the vet within the next 24 hours. And if you don't, then we can see some pretty significant changes, including ulcers that erode deeply enough into the eye to permanently damage the eye and potentially lose the eye. So we don't mess around with eyes in our practice. It's serious. A couple of years ago, I had a little French bulldog that came in with a corneal ulcer that was deep enough that it was protruding. It had a desmetaseal. And I called the vet school and I said, I need to send this dog in. And it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's a 2-hour drive and the ophthalmology resident comes on the phone and I said, I really need to get this dog in. She's got a desmetaseal. And she starts quoting all these prices for how much it's going to be. And I looked at the woman and she said, I have insurance. I said, she has insurance. She doesn't care how much it costs. We need to save this dog's eye. Because it was a 9-month-old Frenchie.
Yeah.
Adorable. But, you know, any of the dogs with the eyes that are protruding are more at risk of these kinds of injuries. And the resident said, she has insurance. Great. Send her in. Because in other words, we're just going to whatever we need to do, we're going to do. So it wasn't going to be one of those things that you go to the vet and you're like, well, how much is that going to be? And I'm not sure if I can do it. This is the benefit of insurance. Is the dog saved her eye, but it could have gone very badly.
Yes.
If she hadn't had insurance and if we hadn't pushed the ophthalmologist to see her that night.
Hey, friends. Did you know that the Marty and Laura Show website has a special page just for young animal lovers? Whether your child is meeting their first pet or already dreaming of becoming a veterinarian, Kids Corner is a place to explore animals through creativity, curiosity, and age-appropriate learning. Designed for young animal lovers and their families, these resources encourage empathy, responsibility, and a lifelong love of pets. Start off with a free coloring page. That's right. A new coloring page is available regularly. Download one free and check back often for new designs. And if you love that free page, take your coloring adventure further with the 10-page Color Me Pets coloring pack for just $5. Each page is filled with adorable, breed-specific dogs and fun educational prompts that spark creativity and curiosity. This pack is perfect for kids who want to explore, who want to color, and who want to discover more about pets. It encourages careful observation, fine motor skills, and an appreciation for animals, all while providing hours of fun. Plus, it's an easy, printable download, perfect for rainy days, long car rides, or creative play at home. Artwork by award-winning artist Sandy Mesmer, the Color Me Canine Collection brings even more adorable pets and fun designs. Explore full coloring books available online through Sandy's shop link on our page. Visit martyandlauraShow.com/kids-corner to learn more.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Now, the thing that I do know, as I told you earlier when we were talking off air, eyeballs are sort of a mystery to me, the exception being, you know, the corneal ulcer from the pugs.
Right, because they're common.
Well, because of the pugs. But the most thing I remember is, you know, being at a dog show with a dog that had scratched its eye or done something and couldn't get to the vet. And they said, put some drops in it. But whatever you do, do not use a steroid drop.
Correct. So you can go to the pharmacy and pick up an eye lubrication. You can use artificial tears. You can use a triple antibiotic for the eye. Do not use a steroid until you know for sure the dog doesn't have a corneal ulcer.
Right.
Because a steroid will slow the healing and that will increase the risk that the dog has permanent eye damage. So we don't mess around with that until the cornea has been stained with fluorescein. Now, fluorescein is this really cool stuff. It sort of looks orange on the paper. And then when you put it in the cornea, it turns this green color under a woods light,
which is green. Green.
Not maybe it's green. It's green. So it's really cool because it's a very effective tool that we can use to determine if there is an ulcer in the cornea. So it's easy to do. But before you do any kind of eye drop, any lubrication, the first thing that has to happen is a Schirmer tear test. And that's a little piece of filter paper that gets put in the eye. It's like 20 millimeters long, two centimeters. And you put that in the dog's eye and measure how much tears the dog is making. And a lot of people will say, well, why are you doing that? Because the dog has got this watery eye. Well, tear film comes in three layers. It comes as a water layer, a mucus layer, and an oil layer. And if you put an eye drop in the dog's eye to check for fluorescein or to numb the eye or any of those things before you measure the tears production, then you can alter the results of that test.
Oh, interesting.
So It's really important. Schirmer tear tests are not a big deal. Mm-hmm. They look a little weird. I've had them done because when you wear contact lenses, they do Schirmer tear tests to make sure you make enough tears.
Right.
Or if you're an older lady who's past menopause, you may have a dry eye situation. So Schirmer tear tests are not a big deal. But the dog or the person has to have this little strip that sticks out of their eye for 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's like the longest 60 seconds of your life unless you're holding your breath and you're underwater. But it has to be done as the very first test. So the dogs will come in with like huge amounts of mucus and all this goopy stuff coming out of their eye. And it looks like they've got plenty of tears, but they're not making the water part of the tear. They're making the mucus layer to compensate for the lack of the water layer. So I think it's important that people kind of grasp this concept. If your vet may do this Schirmer tear test first, and it takes 60 seconds. You can't make it any shorter. 60 seconds is 60 seconds. It's a simple test. It's not expensive, but it does require a specific order that you do things in. So you get this done before you put the drops in that numb the eye or the drops in that stain the eye. Super important.
Got it.
So pigment keratitis can be the result of long-standing dry eye. Dry eye can end up to be a lot of mucus, but the corneal ulcer is very, very common. So those are kind of the three top things that we often see. And as the corneal ulcer heals, this can be a little deceiving because you can have the ulcer completely healed over, but then this granulation tissue can move into the cornea. It can be this pink kind of raised surface on the eye, and it looks like the eye is worse, but that's actually the blood vessels moving into the cornea, bringing in new cells, allowing it to heal. Now, that's not the way all corneal ulcers heal, but it's the way some of them heal. And so it's this little raised pink granulation bed on the eye, and that's when you pull out the steroids. And some of my younger doctors are like, no, I can't put a steroid in here. And you're like, no, you have to at that point, because the stain that's being taken up is not because of the ulcer. It's because the granulation tissue is a little rugged and rough, and so the stain will sit on that. So it's kind of this fine line. And so many times you may end up seeing an ophthalmologist, and there are veterinary ophthalmologists in every state in the country. And these are people who are magical people. They can put their nose right up against your dog's nose with equipment and with certain lights and certain things and certain tools. And the dog somehow just magically sits there and looks at him without, like, you know, taking off their nose. So I think ophthalmologists are amazing people. They have to work on a very specific organ that's very delicate, that requires nose-to-nose contact with your dog or cat. And if they do something wrong, it goes south. So super important that if your vet says you need to see an ophthalmologist, you shake your head and you say, yes, yes, I will go to see an ophthalmologist, because these are diseases that are not easily managed by every... Now, the first three most veterinarians can do. But once we get further down the list, it's more complicated. Go see an ophthalmologist.
Okay. So we've gone through pretty common corneal, sorry, I wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yep.
Corneal injuries. So now we've got some actual diseases that can happen within the cornea. And remember, guys, we're going to do some discussion of other parts of the eyeball and other things that can happen, but we're just going to stick to the cornea today. So what are some of the diseases that we can see that can pop up that have to do with specifically the cornea?
So KCS is dry eye, relatively common, especially in older dogs. That's that mucusy thing. So just be aware that requires lifetime medication. Pigmentary keratitis, PK, requires lifetime medication. We can see other things like lipid deposits. These are also relatively common. Sometimes it's in one eye, sometimes it's in both. And the dog will come in with this sort of shiny little crystalline deposit in the cornea of the eye. And sometimes you'll see it in certain lights, or the vet may see it at the appointment. And they're no big deal. They look a little weird. They usually recommend that you do a thyroid test to make sure the dog isn't hypothyroid.
Oh, interesting.
They don't get worse. They don't progress. They don't go away. They just sit there.
They don't harm the vision. Okay.
Don't harm the vision. Well, if it's right in the middle of the visual field, they may have to kind of look around it. But dogs don't drive cars and dogs don't read books, so it's not so terrible. And it doesn't get worse. So it doesn't cause the dog any visual deficits that are significant. It doesn't cause the dog pain. They're just there. And I don't know how they just show up one day and that they're static, but it's weird. Now, today I had a dog in that has corneal endothelial dystrophy, and she's been diagnosed by an ophthalmologist. I did not make this up. And that's an older dog condition. And the whole cornea on the inside of the cornea, not the surface that you can see on the outside, but the whole inside gets cloudy. So it can look really deceiving because a cloudy cornea can mean an ulcer, it can mean glaucoma, or it can be corneal endothelial dystrophy. Now, if the eye is suddenly cloudy and red and painful, you need to truck into the veterinary clinic and or the ophthalmologist within 24 hours, because if your dog has glaucoma and it has a steamy cornea with redness, that dog is going to lose its vision within 24 hours. So you do not wait on this.
Ow.
If the eye is steamy, red, and painful, you get to see an ophthalmologist or an emergency veterinary clinic immediately.
What does steamy mean? What does this mean in this application?
Yeah, that's pretty much the description. Is instead of the eye being clear, you'll get up in one eye or both eyes. You'll get up some morning, you'll come home from work someday, and the eye is just a steamed over look. It's just like your mirror steams in the bathroom when you take a shower. Steamy. Like your window in the winter steams up. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's steamy,
like when it,
cloudy.
When the coffee fogs up your glasses.
Exactly. Or you walk through the door in the winter and you've gone from cold to warm and your glasses steam over. So if you see that, you need to get to the veterinary clinic immediately. That is an actual emergency. Don't mess around with it. But could it be corneal endothelial dystrophy? Sure, but that's a lot more rare than glaucoma. So you assume the worst and hope for the best. All right. Then we have PPMs, which are persistent pupillary membranes.
Right.
And those are relatively common in some breeds, Basenjis, Corgis, Aussies. Some breeds have those. And those are little strands that were developmentally supposed to be there before the iris, the black round part of the middle of your eye, developed. But sometimes they attach to the cornea and they can leave a little bit of scar tissue. Again, I've only seen one dog that ever had PPMs that were serious enough to cause a vision problem. But they can happen, and that's usually seen in young dogs, and oftentimes they're only seen by ophthalmologists because they're looking with really special lights with big magnification, not what your usual veterinary visit looks like. We can see dermoids. Now, dermoids will totally freak you out. Dermoids are where there's a piece of skin with hair that grows on the cornea.
No, that's wrong. That's just wrong.
And I've seen maybe one every 4 or 5 years. They are really rare. But they can happen. So if you have one of those, you don't have an emergency, but it's something you should probably see the vet for.
And does this happen as a baby dog, an old dog? What?
It's a baby dog.
What?
So when they open their eyes, when they open their eyes, you'll see it. And then we get into some really funky, far out weird stuff. We can see epithelial inclusion cysts where there's a little cyst on the cornea. We can see superficial punctate keratitis, which are little dots in the cornea. Fungal infections and cancer in the cornea, I have absolutely never diagnosed one of those, but the ophthalmologist lists them. And then there's also something called Florida spots or tropical keratopathy. And clearly, when you live in Wisconsin, you do not have Florida spots.
I'm having this problem, no.
No. So we have to be complete. But anyway, if you go in with a corneal change, your vet's going to do a Schirmer tear test measuring the tear production. They'll do a fluorescein dye test, which turns their eye green. They might do a slit lamp where they have a special light that has this tiny little narrow beam that they can look at. Most of the time, it's just an ophthalmologist that has those. And then there's tonometry, which is the tonopen or the tonograph that checks for the amount of pressure in the eye to look for glaucoma. So those are the four kinds of diagnostic tests that are frequently done. And then we'll also frequently numb the eye so that we can pull up the third eyelid and look for that Grias seed, look for follicular conjunctivitis. And we'll talk about that when we talk about eyelids. But there's this whole bunch of other things that are done. But those are the basic tests that are done, are going to be Schirmer, fluorescein, slit lamp, and tonometry as, along with the proparacaine. So these are commonly done in regular practices. Some veterinarians are better with eyes than others. And if you go to somebody that says, I'm out.
No on the eyeballs.
Go see an ophthalmologist. Just go see an ophthalmologist. And not everybody likes eyes. My daughter, who's a nurse practitioner, does not like looking at eyes. Some people get a little freaked out by eyes. Other people don't. So, you know, just be aware. And if you don't like eyes, that's okay. You can get around that.
Every time the pugs would get like some little scratch, like there'd be a boy tussle or they'd, you know, I had one that would just love to bomb around through the bushes and everything. I'm like, what? Don't. Man, you know, it's just, it was so frustrating.
They make doggles for dogs. So those are the doggy goggles.
Yes.
And they're improving them all the time. They've gotten much better. My son used to have a dog that had some, he had no vision in one eye because he detached a retina, and the other eye had very serious damage to it. So he put those little doggles on the dog because he would turn his head and smack into the coffee table. And so it was protecting the only, he had like 10% of his vision left in one eye. So you had to be very careful with this dog. And I will say, and we teach a lot of clients how to do this, if you have to medicate your dog's eye, there's a couple ways you can do it. One is you can have two people that do it, one person to help hold the dog and hold the eyelids open. But if you're by yourself and you have to medicate the dog's eye, what I usually do is back them into a corner. Don't do this on the couch or on your bed or somewhere else that the dog can keep backing away. Back them into a corner so that they're kind of trapped, and then straddle them so that you have one leg on each side of their shoulder. And then if you tip the dog's head up with one hand, tip up their head, and with the other hand, hold the eyedropper and the eyelids open, you can pretty effectively medicate most dogs and some cats, because you can't do anything to cats sometimes, to medicate the eye. And some of these medications, when we have something like a corneal ulcer, we will tell people you need to treat this eye 6 times a day to get healing done. And they look at you like, oh my God. And you say, hey, two things. One, I will know if you're treating 6 times a day or not, because the ulcer will not heal if you don't do this.
True.
And two is, you don't have to do it every 4 hours. I'm not saying that you have to set your alarm and get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to do it. I am saying when you're home in the evening, do it every hour. Mm-hmm. And then when you're not home, your dog should have its eyes closed anyway. So it's probably not going to need as much medication because its little blinkers will be closed. So those are important things. The other thing that's kind of cool is, and we've done this for a long time, is use soft contact lenses on dogs with corneal ulcers.
Really?
So,
now
yeah,
I've done this for, not seen.
Oh yeah. I've done this for a lot of years. I usually can talk an ophthalmologist out of those extra lenses that they had samples of. Not because the dog gets a correction from it, because that soft contact lens can sit on the eye, protect the eye from additional damage, hold the medication against the eye. So it has to be done by a veterinarian. Do not start doing stuff like this by yourself. This
slap is not your own contacts in your dog's eyeballs. Please do not.
No. Don't do that. But sometimes these soft contact lenses can be really vision saving. We used to, back when I got out of vet school, we used to suture the eyelids closed because that would protect the cornea.
Yeah.
But that always scared me because then you couldn't see what was going on. And so you'd take the suture out once a week and look and you'd be like, this didn't go well. But with a contact lens, you can see what's going on and you can medicate with that lens in. And so the contact lens does hold the medication in contact with the eye. So if your veterinarian says, we're going to put a contact lens on, or your ophthalmologist says that, that's not unusual. I've done it for easily 35 years. So this is not new, but it might be new to the pet owner that hasn't had the experience before.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, there's lots more parts of the eyeballs, you guys. And so we will be doing a short little series of eyeball conversations because it's fascinating.
And we have just scratched the surface.
Oh, come on. That is terrible.
I know.
Oh, my God. Marty's doing puns, y'all. This is bad.
It's late and I haven't had dinner. It's
I know.
10
you
o'clock.
Need to go. You need to go eat your noodles.
I haven't had my dinner yet.
Go eat your noodles, man. Thank you so much, Marty. I, as always, I appreciate you. Our audience deeply appreciates your willingness to give us half an hour of your time when you don't have much to spare. So thank you.
It's been great. I love talking about this stuff.
Well, we appreciate you. Have a good one, dear.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog, and we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.